Welcome to another episode of Fed Ninjas. And joining us again is Eric Adams, but also we have a special guest here, Corey Epps. Corey is another CISO, and today we are going to talk about the new roles or the different types of things that CISOs will be taking a look at going in the future. Did I capture that all right?
Oh, that was perfect.
Yeah.
All
right.
Sounds
great.
Very good, Maurice.
All right. You just never know. But with that being said, Corey, there were different things that you had experienced in your prior jobs, especially after COVID and those other environmental factors that came into mind, whether it be COVID, whether it be financial or what have you. There was a massive shift that we, in our conversation before, I had no idea that was going on simply because I've never been a CISO. What are some of those factors that you saw as you went through the changes? Because they impacted you. They certainly impacted other CISOs. And I know Eric's going to chime in, but I'm going to give the platform over to you.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a great question. I don't think I'm unlike other people in this role, in that, you know, over the course of our career, we've kind of gone from role to role to role as we've progressed, or we've progressed within our own companies.
Right.
And I think that the challenge of the space that we're in is, you know, we're kind of always at the ready, right? Mm-hmm. And I think one of the components that's stressful about our position is that we're building defenses, we're building countermeasures, we're building these mechanisms to protect our organizations, protect information, meet regulatory requirements, contractual commitments to customers. We're engaging with customer commitment resolvers, but, you know, all the while we're kind of waiting for an attack to occur. And then we have to jump in and we have to respond. And I think that level of stress really builds on, you know, people individually, you know, because we're also leading teams and we're, you know, members of communities and families and various other things that draw our time and our attention. I think a lot of this kind of compounds with an element of stress that we don't always kind of recognize.
Right.
And I think for me personally, you know, when my role was affected in April, or I guess about this time, 2023, it was a little bit of a wake-up call for me. But I had the mentality of, oh, you know, I'll go find another CISO role. Security roles are in demand. You know, this won't be a challenge. When it became a challenge, that's when I kind of sat back and realized, wow, I'm really burned out.
Yeah.
And I'm tired. And kind of the recognition of I'm not giving, you know, my best self into my role, and that, you know, I likely wasn't giving my best self into my prior role. Mm-hmm. Even though I felt like that I was, I think the reality is I probably was not. And so, you know, I think having some time to step away and kind of reinvigorate myself and kind of find the passion that I had for this crazy industry of security that I've fallen in love with, it was a good thing. It was a bit of a blessing in disguise.
And Eric, I'm going to assume that was the same with you when, I use the word assume. What was it like for you during that same period of time?
Yeah, I like the way Corey described it, because as you get up to be a CISO, there are a lot of other things that you're doing. And you learn these things, like you might be a security configuration manager, or you might be a application security expert, you might be a vulnerability manager. And then you have all these different roles and you understand all of this knowledge and you put it all together, and then you build teams, and then you understand customer requirements because you're on the phone with customers a lot and they have security things that measures that they want to put in place to make sure their data is secure. And so you're used to these soft skills and you're used to working with your teams and accomplishing tasks basically all mm-hmm. the time. And like Corey said too, you're always waiting for that event to occur. So you've got preventative security measures that you put in place mm-hmm. and compliance, you know, speaks to some of those, but really you put in the best ones that you can based on the risk for your system. But then also you practice some of these incident responding measures too, how you're going to handle an incident. You go through these kind of exercises to be able to measure how good you would do, and then you increase the capacity in that. And then you're always evaluating your security controls, your capabilities, you're finding new ones to add on, dropping off some of the older ones that are antiquated, and so forth. And so you get to a point where you've started out tactical in all these areas, then you become strategic and you've got a mix of both. And so I think that that's what makes you a little bit of understanding and looking back, like, wow, I think we're doing a pretty good job, but we still have to understand what could hit next. And so in the role of CISO, it's interesting because, like Corey said, if you step away from it, you're like, oh, okay, there'll be many of these other CISO careers available. But what I've seen is you've really got to reinvent yourself. So what I've done is actually started with contracts independently and said, okay, I've got some knowledge, expertise in these areas like federal cloud authorization and authority to operate, and also some virtual CISO roles. So possibly it would be good to be able to explore those options, but also seeing how this is progressing and how other people like Corey and a lot of other people I know really who have left the CISO, a job being a CISO for a while for one reason or another, maybe they didn't like where they were at or something changed and they get back into it, they're seeing, wow, this is way different. It's an interesting marketplace right now. And we're seeing the hiring trend a little bit. I'm seeing it less. I'm watching it closely. It's changing. Like you're seeing things like CIO roles, which have had past CISO experience. And some of the numbers are really pretty strange as well.
I think it has impacted organizations as a whole, because Corey, you bring up, you felt burnt out, felt buried. And I know that that has been a common theme across the board as a consultant that I've found that's the one thing that they keep on saying, I've been burnt out. I've missed on games. I've missed on all those different things like that. And then they have this fresh perspective during COVID that I got to stay at home. I got to see some things. I got to help develop my kids. I have all these really important things, and they got a taste of that. But the funny thing is that everyone else got a taste of it too.
Yeah.
So
they did.
It's now altogether a different function. And so I know that the CISO role is reinventing itself. And Eric, I appreciate you bringing up the ways that it has. How then do you propose, or have you kept it in balance as you go into consulting roles, as you become virtual CISOs and those types of things? Because you were talking a very traditional role in times past that is now going to move into a direction that probably never has been gone down before.
You know, Maurice, you bring up something interesting, and I think we've talked a little bit about COVID. And one of the things that, and I was having a conversation with someone earlier this morning, and we were kind of talking about some of the leadership challenges of the CISO role, and specifically in COVID. And kind of one of the things that we were talking about was we've had this shift in what we view as values and how we work. And that I think a lot of us fell in, and I know I was completely guilty of this pre-COVID and probably a lot during COVID, but you know, like the paradigm for which I had my emphasis of attention was likely work, family, and health. Somewhere in that, you know, likely in that order. And now kind of thinking about, you know, what's important and how we were working, you know, how do we inverse that into where there's, you know, health, family, work, and that one of the things that I know during COVID, like I completely didn't recognize, I've been working from home since 2014, and all of a sudden COVID hits, you know, and I've got, you know, a family that's there at the house, and I'm thinking, you know, like, why are people in the house in the middle of the day? Like, this is, they're invading me. this isn't normal. And I think one of the comments that was made today earlier that I thought was really kind of insightful was putting health first before family. You know, the family needs, obviously, you know, and your family can be your kids, your wife, your extended family members, your friends, whatever it may be, but they obviously need you to be there. And I know I wasn't putting my health first. Heck, I probably wasn't putting my family anywhere in there, even close to number two at the time, just recognizing where I was spending time and energy. But I think that's been like one of the positive things that's come out of it. You know, talking about the virtual CISO role, like we didn't hear a lot about those in 2020.
Right.
You know, I think it's really kind of come to light, and kind of similar journey that you know, Eric's taken. You know, I took kind of out of necessity, you know, into last summer was, you know, I felt the pressure to find a role. And when I realized I was burned out, I then felt the pressure of, I've got to stay connected to this, you know, ever-changing industry. And I had this fear of if I step away for 2-3 months, you know, what am I going to miss? So a little bit of the FOMO from an industry perspective, but recognizing how quick things change, you know, how we have to stay abreast of new technologies, attack components within the threat landscape, changes in regulation, like all these various different aspects or components that, you know, having to stay abreast of. And, you know, similarly, that's kind of what led me into consulting. I kind of fell into it, actually, of making just phone calls and having someone offer me effectively a job of, hey, can you help me, you know, work on this executive narrative? Because, you know, the SEC is putting these regulations in place and we have to change, you know, how we communicate this internally, and we're going to have to educate. And I could use a second set of eyes. So that's how I kind of ended up into, you know, providing advisory.
You bring up something important, because my background is organizational psychology. A lot of times they go into HR and those different things there. But from an organizational psychology standpoint, there's always studies on how effective leaders lead and all kinds of things like this. And there was an individual named Adam Grant that's become pretty popular for a number of his different books. And one of his first ones is called Give and Take. And I do digress a little bit, so I apologize first of all. But going back to what you said, he did a study on people that were givers and takers in an organization. Original studies found that the takers were the ones that were always succeeding at first. If you then fast forward their careers later, it turned into the givers that everyone knew that they could go to, and that there's the longevity and the trust and the relationships built. But then the irony about all of that is that the givers that took care of themselves were the ones that were effective. The givers that kept on giving without taking care of themselves basically became ineffective too, because when you don't take care of yourselves, there's nothing to give back, if that makes any sense. And so
that does, Maurice. It reminds me when Corey was explaining this on taking care of things in order. It's kind of like when you're on an airplane, you go through the pre-flight checklist and it says, oh, if the oxygen masks come out from the top of the cabin, put yours on first, then help everyone else, or you won't be able to help them because you'll pass
absolutely
out.
Absolutely.
That's a, oh my goodness, that's a great analogy. And so looking at that and reprioritizing, I'm going to put this question to both of you, though, is as it creeps back. So remember the good old term scope creep. As all of these different things come into position, so there's opportunities and advancements that allow it so that you can prioritize that time. But how do you keep it from creeping back in so that in this new environment, we're not getting sucked back into the vortex of, I'm giving, but I haven't taken care of myself yet. And this is especially true in an executive type role that you two are in.
So I think just real quick, I'll go real quick, because I want to hear what Corey has to say. Right. He's got some excellent insights, but I think we learned from this pandemic period, and we learned how to kind of change that a little bit. And it was like seeing other people at home. Yeah, you're invading my workspace. This is kind of weird. But we also saw how other workers worked at home and how they could be productive at their home environments. We learned to adapt to that to make sure that they're secure remotely. But then we also learned how we could have quality time, but also very thoughtful time, where if we come up with an idea, then we write it down or whatever, because we're always thinking. The CISO is always thinking about bad things that could happen in their environment. So we write it down, but then really being careful about putting that into the right time frame to say, okay, I want to talk to somebody about this. I'm going to schedule a meeting, and then putting it away and understanding there's that quality work time when everybody else is available, the other people working, and then being able to kind of build schedules upon that and then having other action plans after.
That's great. What's your take on that, Corey?
You know, I think even kind of before COVID, because I was working at home, I have a little bit of a different perspective in that I think I learned, and I'm going to give my wife credit for this, because it's a term that she was using in regards to how we were trying to navigate these changes, ruthless prioritization.
Ooh, I like that.
And specifically in not necessarily how we work, but, you know, how we work, because I think we were talking about, like, how do we take care of ourselves, whether it's, you know, physical health, mental health, et cetera. Ruthlessly prioritizing that, because when you're working from home, it is so easy to get sucked into the next call or responding to email or checking Slack or making one last update to this presentation and ensuring it gets distributed out to the team. You know, there's always something. So what works for me is doing things early in the morning. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, I know me, and it, something else will get in the way. So having that, you know, that prioritization and that time block of this is when I'm going to, you know, do these certain items. And I've kind of got, you know, my routine, if you will, for working through those. And I think that's something that I found that works, you know, having a blended staff that went through COVID and blended in the sense of I had members of my team that were always in the office. And then I had members of my teams that were remote. And the ones that went home from the office, they were working all the time, mm-hmm. like sun up, sun down, like really no blended time into when they weren't on. And that was a challenge for some of them. And I think we kind of learned to do that together around, you know, what are the effective boundaries? What are the expectations? But I think some of the things that really came out of, you know, one being a virtual organization that was entirely virtual for the time during the pandemic, like our intra-organization communication, that level increased like thousands of percent. Gone were the ability to take for granted of catching somebody in the hallway for a quick conversation. Like we had to be incredibly intentional about who we communicated with, how we communicated with them, and really cornering off time to do that and making that a priority.
You know, I think you ought to copyright that ruthless prioritization, first of all. that's
definitely my wife's term. I give her all the credit on that one.
Yeah. And I think it's something that so many people could benefit from. And thanks also for going over the different environmental factors that come into play. There is something that I want to return to, though, that we were talking about prior to coming to this conversation. And even though there's a changing environment, there are those things that I'll call the old school type of things that you miss. Some of those things include the camaraderie of leading a team, of solving a problem with the team right there. Now, instead of that, it's more or less you're a thought leader, an expert in that particular role, but maybe sometimes it doesn't. You don't have the immediacy of pinging that off of people. Would you mind delving into that a little bit?
Yeah, it's definitely interesting now. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing that I miss about, you know, a traditional CISO role is the team aspect and that camaraderie within an organization and solving problems together. But I think what's worked well for me, at least in, you know, the advisory aspect is I'm able to carry forward a lot of those experiences and those lessons learned and drive those into conversations of, you know, have you considered this? Or have you tried this? And if so, what type of results did you get? And kind of helping shift some of the train of thought from there. I think some of the things that I know I've learned to use are those experiences, simply because I think that a lot of what's occurred continues to repeat. Right. There's a lot of best practices that we painstakingly work to put in places in other organizations that some teams, they just haven't gotten there yet. And so being able to kind of lend a hand or an ear into what they're doing and help understand why, there's guidance that we've been able to apply into those so that you get some of the reward in that way and seeing the advice and the practical recommendations come through in the sense of here's what I've done in the past or parts that I've observed or have led, and here were challenges. Here are things that we did to overcome those. You know, have you considered X, Y, or Z, and see how they apply those into their own organization and culture?
Man. I think that's perfect. What Corey, how he explains that is really being able to be an expert consultant based on your experiences, because there's so many experiences. Like you could find security controls from ChatGPT or something, but you're not going to get that emotional connection when you talk to a board of directors or when you talk to other C-suite and you understand how it fits in their business model. And it's going to look different when you apply it to different another company, another business model, another market. It's going to be slightly different. I've seen this many times before where I say, oh yeah, this worked over here. And you start to adapt it, and then you understand the nuances of how you've got to change it a little bit. And so I think that's super important. What Corey says is it's those experiences, being able to relay those to somewhere that can also use those. So you're kind of navigating and helping them through that difficult task of whatever it might be, and you're able to help them change and adapt through it as well. But I do agree also missing that camaraderie with a team, because when you assemble a team and each one of those people can do a task, and when you first look at it, you're like, oh, I've done something like that before. I want to kind of clone myself because there's so many of these things that need to get done. And then you bring someone on, you obviously interview them, ask them their experience, but you find out that they can do it better than if you cloned yourself to do it, because they bring their individual experience and you kind of guide, you know, them through the process of what you want it to look like. And then as it's progressing with the other business leaders to make sure it meets the what it's intended to do. So yeah, it's that is a thing that I think the individual contributor consultant does miss. However, they can see that manifest in the organization when they give their expert advice.
What strikes me about everything being said here is in this new type of role, especially in an advisory role. Before, in any organization, when you have a boilerplate job description, everyone's going to try to fit in. And in this case, you have the opportunity to be completely unique. Though the CISO has all kinds, or CISO has all types of things that are common, there's a different take that you can bring about. And I think that will lead to an effective consultant, because in one advisory role, someone will work, someone might not. But it's being able to identify where you're unique at and then sticking with that. I mean, this is kumbaya stuff, but it works. I've seen that over and over again. And having said that, I return back to folks that are currently in a CISO role. What would you tell them? What would you tell them to be aware of? You've given your stories right here, but what is it that you've seen in the ever-changing environment that they should be prepared for themselves?
A great question. You know, I think I wish someone had told me at some point to slow down. And not slow down in the sense of being agile and making changes or being focused and addressing risk in a certain way, but slow down in the sense of everything else going around in the role. I know just kind of looking back on my career, there was a lot of, and maybe angst isn't the right word, but it was kind of a focus effort to get done what I need to get done and move on to the next thing. Like I felt like there was never enough time to address what needed to be addressed. And I think that the relationships that the CISO has to build, when I take that, I think that's what suffers. So when I say slow down, I think that there's a focus on the priorities of the role and the ability to establish those connections in an organization, because those relationships, both really in and outside of the organization they're operating with, I think that's what's going to help move the needle, because the CISO role is such a kind of an important crux now in organizations large and small. Their ability to influence, their ability to educate, their ability to inform and help shift and change maybe directions, train of thought, decisions of technology, you know, shift in business process. They're touching all these various different things now that they didn't have to touch 2, 5, 10 years ago. So I think mine would be slow down, pick your head up, and be able to, you know, effectively look around, because it's really easy to get stuck into, you know, that single direction. Because I mean, just from my experience and my own reflection, I've been incredibly guilty of that in the past.
How about you, Eric? Anything?
Yeah, I totally agree. I really like Corey's advice, because you can get so entrenched into trying to solve everything at once that you're not taking a step back and understanding kind of the big picture. And I've seen that, and especially with compliance requirements. And if you step into a role and it says, okay, we're meeting this compliance, and then you evaluate it and you say, okay, some things look pretty good. There's a lot of other things we need to do better. But more importantly, we need to look at it from a risk-based point of view, from the market that this business is in, whether it's financial, healthcare, some other critical infrastructure like energy, and compare it kind of across the board to others in the industry. And then you're able to have good conversations with your customers. But also, once you do that evaluation, kind of step back and take a breath, and then meet with the other business leaders and understand how to align your objectives with the business so that you're supporting those, and then have a written plan of that, and have each person on your team have a part of that role. That's kind of how you effectively understand what they're doing and their part in it, and they feel a part in it, of course. And then you're able to gauge where you're at and where you're improving. And also looking at it from that risk point of view and being able to align to things like an IT security governance. That's something that I helped establish at one of the fintechs. And that helped a lot because we're able to do quarterly risk reviews to bring in all the business leaders. And these were things that the chief legal officer worried about and was saying, oh, I'm glad that you're also worried about this thing. I didn't know anybody else was. And now we're coming together and talking about it. And anybody in the organization can report a business risk or cyber risk. We would evaluate it. We'd bring it up to the committee before we met. We would assign it some information to it that we've looked and seen if it was already being looked at. And so having these type of meetings when you align with these other business units, I think that's what helps. And that's kind of, I don't want to read Corey's mind, but that's really the taking a step back and putting things into business context and saying, okay, we're not just looking at this from a cyber context, but we want to show how we're protecting the business by looking at these things that could hurt us. But also, here's another thing to tell CISOs is, yeah, there are new SEC requirements. There's things like materiality. You have to understand how to gauge those, working with legal and finance departments, understanding how to measure those, understanding how to protect all of the C-level, including yourself, in case there is a legal problem. Mm-hmm. So that's a new conversation that people are having. And also it probably relates to some of the articles that have been posted recently that say, yeah, about 50% of CISOs are looking for jobs at other places.
Right.
Maybe where they're at, they don't like it so well. They want to go somewhere else. It's probably the grass is greener on the other side. Who knows? And then about 25% of them are actually looking for a different career. I think this was a Gartner article from about March of 2023 that talked about this. Somebody actually put it on my LinkedIn feed. But then you also combine it with the amount of attacks that have increased. And so to me, that says, where are we at as an industry? If we have less CISOs that are doing this full time in a role with a team that they've worked with, they've trained alongside the team, they've aligned with the business, they have these strategies. And now if you have that in combination with attacks doubling, then it's kind of a scary combination. And so I think that's something the industry, if to me, it feels like the industry put a lot of time, money, and effort into CISOs probably 2 years ago, 2021. And it's like putting tires and brakes on your car 2 years ago. Yeah, you're probably due to renew and put new tires and brakes on your car again. So I'm seeing some of these disturbing trends. That's one of the reasons I want to talk more about this, is to say, yeah, these are things that businesses really need to consider.
You take that, and then you have, you know, and I can't remember where the statistic was. I need to go find it. You know, the average tenure of a CISO is like 18 to 24 months.
Wow, that's not what they tell you in business school to do.
No, it's not. And to add to that, it takes about, I mean, you can get to a company, understand what it's doing, understand what's working good, understand improvements you need to do quickly to avoid a disaster from your experience, and then have a plan to work to where you want it to be. That alone takes about fulfilling that plan about 18 to 24 months. And so then you just become effective and then you're not there anymore. So
yeah, I mean, there's a lot you can do in a short period of time, you know, but I think I would make the argument that, you know, an effective CISO is someone that can really understand and influence the business.
Yes.
And that takes time, especially depending on the industry that you're operating within. You know, I think just seeing and knowing some of the CISOs that have been in the industry that personally I feel have been really effective in their roles, they've had, you know, pretty significant tenure in the companies that they're operating in. Right. And, you know, I think if there's one thing that I have observed over the last year is that trend of a lot of seated CISOs moving voluntarily, being recruited into new roles. I mean, this is my observation. I'd love to see some data around it, but I don't see a lot of individuals changing roles at the rate that they've been changing in years past.
Wow. That's interesting. I agree too. It's amazing. I mean, it seems like a lot of the CISOs that have stayed at a lot of the companies have been able to align with the other C-suite and the board of directors. And not saying that the ones that have been there not very long haven't, It's just they have that good relationship, the good soft skills, and all of those parts to be able to really put things in business context. And also, on the inverse of that, having those folks understand the CISO, taking time to meet with the CISO and, take a look at some of the things that you've transcribed from very technical into a business context. I think that that's super important just to say, hey, CISO, tell me what this means in a business. How much money could we lose if XYZ happens? And being able to have that data, I think those are the CISOs that are in there for a long time.
There's so many items that this obviously begets another episode. What I'd like to do is make sure that we end this one, but consider those things that are spur many questions from the audience. And so with that, Corey, thank you for joining us.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.